This is a despicable story. I mean, let's face it. Abraham deserves the Bad Dad of the Millennia Award. And God? God? A God who gives an elderly couple a child and then almost immediately tells the man to kill that child? Not my God. Not worthy of my respect. Despicable and vile. I really don't like this story. And yet here we are. This story is part of our sacred text. Our forefathers, and yes, they were men, decided that this story belongs in the biblical canon. Why? Why? I mean, now there are a lot of theories about this passage. There are a lot of theories about this passage. Perhaps my favorite, and I say this, I say favorite with all the sarcasm that I can muster, is one theory that's put forth by a small group of scholars who believe that as vile as this story is, it is only a rewrite of a much worse story. Some believe that in the original version of this story, Abraham sacrifices Isaac. You heard me right. Abraham murders his son. He kills Isaac because God told him to offer Isaac as a human sacrifice. Despicable and distressing. Now, to be sure, that's not the version that ended up in our Bible. Frankly, though, the argument for this theory, that the original story was actually bloodier and even less palatable than the one which we have in our Bible, is a pretty strong argument. But then that begs the question. If the earliest editor or editors of Genesis felt comfortable rewriting the story, an indication that it was likely never purely factual, then if that's the case, then why include it at all? Why portray the patriarch Abraham as such a horrible, horrible father? Why use this story in any form? There are theories. There are many theories. One, a pretty popular theory, is that this is a story of Abraham's uber obedience to God. The argument is that Abraham loves God so very much that he will even kill Isaac if God tells him to. I don't know. Thing is, Abraham had no trouble previously arguing with God when God planned to wipe out all the people in Sodom. Abraham argued with them, argued with God, when God was ready to kill all the people in a town because they failed to be hospitable and welcoming of the stranger. I read to you from that part. Abraham approached and said, "Will you really sweep the innocent away with the guilty? What if there are 50 innocent people?" It's not like, and then he elaborates, he says, "It's not like you to do this, God. killing the innocent with the guilty as if there were no difference. It's not like you. Will the judge of all the earth not act justly?" And he continues to argue with God. And he goes through sequence, numbers after numbers, and he brings them down. And finally he says, "Abraham, don't be angry with me, my Lord. But let me speak just one more time. Let me ask you one more thing. What if there are 10? And the Lord said, I will not destroy it because of those 10. So, why would Abraham argue for God's mercy for strangers, but not for his own son? Despicable and diffident. Now, neither does the formerly confident and truth-telling Abraham call out God when God refers to Isaac as Abraham's only son. When God calls Isaac Abraham's only son, it simply is not true. God said, "Take your son, your only son whom you love, Isaac, and go to the land of Moriah. Offer him up as an entirely burned offering there on one of the mountains that I will show you." And so we get a picture of a despicable and deceptive God. Now, of course, it could be a bad translation. Most translations have God referring to Isaac as Abraham's only son. Most of the mainline translations, NRSV, CEB, NIV. However, the JPS, which is a Jewish translation, translates only son this way: "Your son, your favored one, Isaac, whom you love." Very different meaning. And so that makes a whole lot more sense to me. Isaac is actually the second son of Abraham in the Genesis narrative. Good old Abe. Again, sarcasm. Good old Abe has another son, Ishmael, born of his servant Hagar. He impregnated her at the insistence of his wife, Sarah. Yep. Sarah and Abraham plotted to have Abraham have sex with their slave and then take her child as their own. Despicable and dominating. Later, gets better, folks. Later, after Isaac is born, our upstanding citizens, Sarah and Abraham, throw Hagar and Ishmael out into the wilderness, out into the desert. They don't need her or her son any longer. And of course, Hagar despairs. Hagar left and wandered through the desert near Beersheba. Finally, the water in the flask ran out, and she put the boy down under one of the desert shrubs. She walked away from him about as far as a bow shot, and she sat down, telling herself, "I can't bear to see the boy die." She sat at a distance. She cried out in grief, and she wept. God heard the boy's cries, and God's messenger called to Hagar from heaven and said to her, "Hagar, what's wrong? Do not be afraid. God has heard the boy's cries over there. Get up, pick up the boy, and take him by the hand, because I will make of him a great nation." This promise from God, this first promise to make a great nation of the first child, is the promise upon which our Muslim sisters and brothers lay claim. We share a lineage with Abraham. But still, if the earliest editor or editors of Genesis felt comfortable rewriting the story of the binding of Isaac, why include it at all? Why portray the patriarch Abraham as such a horrible father? Why use this story in any form? Why would God choose Abraham through whom to deliver the promise? Abraham took matters into his own hands when he raped Hagar in order to have a lineage. He did not trust that God would give him a son through Sarah. Then, to make matters worse, he throws Hagar and his firstborn son Ishmael out into the wilderness. Now, to be sure, the interpretation of that has always blamed it on Sarah. He challenges God at Sodom, but carries out the murder of Isaac. At the very least, even if that first theory that Isaac was actually murdered is not true, at the very least, Abraham traumatizes the child by tying him up and placing him on top of a pile of wood and raising his knife as if to kill him before being stopped by God's messenger. There are theories. Obedience was one. Another is a revisionist Christian interpretation of this story. In this theory, the story is designed to reveal that God does not require us to sacrifice our children. And it foreshadows that God doesn't require that for us, but that God will sacrifice his son, and it's usually using the male gender there, his son, Jesus, on the cross. There are problems with this theory, too. For one, this story was included in the Hebrew Bible, in the Jewish canon, before it ever became part of the Christian canon. It was included in the Hebrew Bible for purposes of its own time and its own place. Now, to be sure, and I said so last week, we can reinterpret the Bible for new times and places. But in this particular case, to do so smacks of supersessionism, the idea that Christianity replaces Judaism and that the Jews no longer are inheritors of God's promise. And what that does is it dances dangerously with anti-Semitism to imply that this story only has meaning when seen through the Christian narrative is to be anti-Semitic, despicable, and dangerous. So where does this leave us? I still haven't given you an explanation for why our forebears in Judaism and the early church fathers, and yes, they were men, decided to include this revised version of the story in the biblical canon. My short answer is, I don't know. That's my short answer. I do know that it is often in the more difficult passages of the Bible that God meets us most fully. So I believe that in our struggle to comprehend, we can hear our still speaking God. Okay, so I can live with Abraham being imperfect. The Bible is chock full of God using imperfect people for God's good purposes. Not one of us in this room or any human being is perfect, and yet God can and does use us for good. when we are open to and respond affirmatively to the Spirit luring us to act lovingly in each moment, we are doing God's will, even though we are terribly imperfect. It's a despicable story, but I can choose to let go of some of my judginess of good old Abe. It was a different culture and a different time, after all. Lineage in that time was a matter of human survival, and that's just not so true in 21st century North America. It is a despicable story, but being obedient to God is more important than family. Now, that's a hard truth, and I don't like it. It's a hard truth, but it is a truth nonetheless. Sometimes following God means disappointing, though never killing, our family members. So I think this story is hyperbole. If we choose not to take it literally, which is a reasonable choice, take it more as if it's a parable, then the literary style used was intended to emphasize the importance of following God. With me so far? It's a despicable story, but this time that I studied the story, and I've studied this one before because it comes up in the lectionary all too often, this time that I struggled with this story, I had a new insight, one that I'd not had before. Now, I like to think that that insight was the Holy Spirit revealing a truth to me. He didn't tell me to kill anybody. Is that good? What if God did not ask Abraham to kill his son? What if that's not what really happened? What if, like each of us, each one of us, Abraham sometimes got confused as he tried to perceive God's will? What if Abraham only thinks God tells him to kill his son? Now, as I'm fond of reminding you, we need each other. Douglas Ann talked with the children about that. We need each other. We need community in which to test and to try out whether what we think is a message from God is indeed a message from God. For example, when I perceive my call to ministry, and it's a pretty woo-woo story, when I perceived my call to ministry, I tested that call in conversation with others within my church. I tested my call with my pastor. I tested my call with my regional minister. And ultimately, in order to become a pastor, I had to test my call with the Regional Commission on Ministry, who ultimately affirmed my call and ordained me, despite my woo-woo sense of call. You see, the church has the koinonia, the community of followers with whom we journey. The church, at its best, is the koinonia. It is a place and a people in which to explore our relationship with God, with the divine, with the mystical, the things that we do not understand. It is the church, the koinonia, is a check on our crazy. It is a check on our misguided perceptions. But notice what happened in our story, in our despicable story today. Abraham perceives that God is calling him to offer his son as a human sacrifice to God. He doesn't stop, and he doesn't consider that this might be out of character with his earlier perceptions of God. This just doesn't sound like God. He doesn't consider that. Remember that he argued with God about destroying Sodom, but he seems to have forgotten that now. He said, it's not like you to do this, killing the innocent with the guilty, as if there were no difference. It's not like you, he argued with God. But he doesn't do any of that when he thinks God is telling him to kill his son Isaac. Neither does Abraham ask Sarah what she thinks. Now, I'll tell you, folks, if I have learned anything in 38 years of marriage, it is this. You ask Maggie before you do something big. You ask Maggie before you do something irreversible. Maybe you have a Maggie that will tell the truth on you, too. Yep, Abraham should have asked Sarah. He also should have talked to other faithful people. He should have gathered what passed for the koinonia of his time and his place to test if what he was hearing really sounded like God to them. But despicably, no. Abraham goes off to the mountaintop ready to kill his son. You know, I told the 8 o'clock service this morning, the way I imagine this, though, the Bible doesn't say this, I imagine him sneaking out of the tent before dawn and taking Isaac with him so Sarah doesn't catch him. That's how I imagine this story. The good news in this story, and I'll tell you, on Monday I didn't think there was any good news in this story, but the good news in this story is that God sent messengers. God sent messengers to stop Abraham from doing something stupid. God does not ask us to kill our children. Period. End of story. Never. No way. That's good news. But even better news is that God will do all that God can do to persuade us. Now, because of free will, God cannot force us. God will do all that God can to persuade us to be the most loving we know how in every single moment. Amen.